Main speaker tonight is Carl.
Thanks, Chris. My name's Carl. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Promises, Promises, and my sobriety date is June 14, 1982. And I'm glad to be here tonight. And thank you, Laura. Thank you, Doug. And thanks, Chris, for asking us to participate in this meeting. I love the energy here. I just love what has happened in a short period of time. You guys, Chris is largely responsible for that. And it's great to see. Chris did ask me to mention the T-shirts. They're not out yet, but soon they have it. They'll be great. You can. It's just a little fundraiser, but you can. The name of the group is on the back, and then there are two photos of Chris on the front. And it's a before and after. He said, "This one's hair." No hair, and it's just it's a nice touch. So look for the 85. Not quite 85. We're still pricing. I guess I better get started here sometime. Welcome to the people that are newer in their sobriety tonight. This is wonderful stuff, and I was so touched by Laura and Doug. I stumbled in here as a daily drinker, getting drunk just about all of those days. I didn't drink before 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but I didn't get into the office until about 9:30 or so in the morning, and I'd slide in past the secretaries and find my office and shuffle through some mail for a while and maybe make a couple of phone calls and just put the things that needed to be done back to the bottom of the pile and kill time till lunch and go out and try to get feeling a little bit better. And then in the afternoon, I'd make some more calls and kill time and wait until about, just watch the clock until about 4:30. And I'd go across the street to a bar in a hotel. And I'd have just to get a drink, just to get feeling better, just to take the edge off so I could get home and get a good night's sleep. And tomorrow I'll get on top of this thing and get it going. And I'd have a second drink, and I'd start talking to some guys I knew, and there'd be another drink, and I'd buy them a drink. And I'd get home about 2 o'clock in the morning, and there'd be that wonderful reception at the door. And I would get into the office the next morning about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I'd shuffle some papers around a little bit, and I'd get through the mail, make a few calls, have some lunch, try to get it together. About 4:30 in the afternoon, I'd be on my way over to the bar to have it just to take the edge off, because I was going to get it a good night's sleep and get a good dinner and get going on this thing tomorrow, first. And I'd have a second drink, and I would have a third drink, and about 2 o'clock, I'd get home. And I'd get to the office maybe about 9:30, 9:40. Slide past the secretaries. And in the middle of all this chaos, one night I was standing in my kitchen drunk. It was about 10 o'clock. And I had this very clear thought. I can't drink just a little. I've got to quit drinking. I've got to quit. And I had no idea how I would do that. I'd seen my brother, who was 15 years prior, had gotten into Alcoholics Anonymous in Los Angeles. And he was doing fine. And I was just thrilled for him. He was doing fine. And he had done some really dramatic stuff. I really thought... before he got into the program, that I would just read about him one day as having gone the wrong way on the freeway. But here he is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous down there, and it was just heartwarming. And I'd get down and I would see him from time to time. And I was just so tickled with that, and I was so touched by the warmth and the honesty and the love that I would go to some open meetings or a speaker meeting with him, play on his turf, wouldn't drink that weekend, would come home Sunday night, just full of the warmth and the love of what I'd seen, and I would order about 8 scotches and somehow congratulate myself on the plane for my brother. You know, how does that work? I don't know. So I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't see myself there. And In fact, I had about 8 years prior to all that, I'd gotten a drunk driving ticket. So I was, I'd left the Hind Quarter about 2 o'clock in the morning out in Lake Oswego, taken that right turn onto McVeigh, and I took it a little wide, just not real wide, and this oncoming car was crowding me on the left, and I sideswiped the thing. It turned out to be a police car, and I, thing. When I got out of jail the next morning, my buddy came to pick me up, and I had two thoughts. One was, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm going to beat this thing, and I'm not an alcoholic. And the other thought was, I need a drink real bad, real bad. So when that moment of clarity came 8 years later, things started moving rather quickly. Within 6 weeks, my brother was in town. You know Clint, he's been up here. We have fun together now. We have a lot of fun together. He's been a huge part of my sobriety, and he was here when I attended the first meeting in on my own account up here. And I went to two meetings that day. The first one was Scully's. He had said, my brother had asked me to set up a meeting for him. He said, you know, I'm going to come up there and stay with you guys if that's okay. My son is graduating from high school in Westland. And while I'm up there, find out where a meeting is for me. You know, he had never gotten a bit close to telling me what to do, but he was starting to sniff it. But he never said anything. I got that meeting set up, I attended it with him, and we're sitting there in Scully's. Great start. Industrial Strength AA. It's just no nonsense, baby. And they came around the room, and my brother was just at ease and funny and caring and having a great time. I was stiff as a board. And they, do you want to say anything? And I said, my name's Carl. I've got to quit drinking, but I don't think I can. And they were so kind. They smiled. They said, we're glad you're here. We're glad you're here. Went to a second meeting that day. Went to a second meeting that night. And by God's grace, I haven't had to drink since that time. And I came to these meetings. I wasn't sure that I belonged here at first. I considered myself kind of a mild case. But it was within a short period of time I started to see the scars, and I could see the truth of it. And call me an alcoholic. That's fine. That's fine. Whatever it takes. I'm here to get well. And it was about not too much after that that I, you know, started hearing you guys talk about the third step and about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. And that was not a real safe subject for me. I had grown up in a kind of an interesting house. It was full of hell, fire, brimstone, all kinds of church. Oh, dear Lord. It was a fundamentalist Protestant thing. Wednesday night prayer meeting, Friday night, Sunday morning, Sunday evening. daily vacation. I learn more Bible verses than, you know. And I really did not know what to do with it. My grandmother was the dominant figure in that home, and my dad was the drunk. He would go off on these trips. He would be gone. He would get an assignment in Japan. My mother would take this herd of kids to her parents' home in Billings, from wherever we happened to be living at the time. My grandmother would look out, and here's her daughter with these kids. By then, she'd moved her husband, my grandfather, out into a second bedroom, so she didn't have to hear his snoring. She had some hope that she would have a pleasant sun twilight years. And her daughter, then she looked out, and her daughter was there with these kids again. So grandfather would come back into her bedroom. We would move in. I thought she was angry at the time. She just was kind of sick of what was going on, I think. But she did. She was a formidable character. But we would watch her, my brother and I, our little sister, saying her prayers in the morning. Oh. And she would go to church with us, and we would follow her down that church aisle. Second pew on the right was hers. We would follow her in. She was, I think she had men in three counties that were frightened of her. She was just that very imposing gal. Very religious. Somebody said she loved God and hated man. It's hard to follow this stuff. So that's what it looked like from our point of view. And it... We have different memories of that time. We were in junior high years, and we were sent to school when it came to ballroom dancing course of instruction in the in gym. We were sent to school with a note: please excuse Clint and Carl from ballroom dancing. You know, that was no movies, no dancing, just so. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We have different memories of. When we were 13 or 14, we were baptized in the Yellowstone River one March, I think it was. Oh. Yeah. Oh. That was brisk. My brother's memory was, I didn't find God there. He said, I didn't find much else for about 3 days, he said. I had a different memory from that era. I came away with the idea, I don't think anybody ever told me this, but I came away with the idea that sex was dirty and filthy and disgusting and ugly, and you should save it for the one you really love. What do you do with that? So I got here, and you guys are talking about third step stuff. And I'm looking back on this, and I'm not sure about all this. But we were talking in a meeting last night about the chapter to the agnostic and how gentle and how beautiful that is, and it describes my attitude so well about the skepticism and the arrogance and it is written in such a way that I didn't need to fight it. Plus, by that time, I was pretty impressed by the fact that the booze problem had apparently been handled. And that is very impressive. I'd tried for a long time. That 8-year period, I knew that I had been drinking too much. I knew that it wasn't social drinking. And I had resolved to cut it back to one or two drinks, maybe three. Got worse and worse and worse and worse. So, pretty impressive stuff here. And the question became, what shall I do with all this? How do we... Is it possible to access that power in other parts of my life? What can we do? I mean, I was feeling good. I was feeling fine. Things were looking better. And in whatever way we start taking credit for the miracle, in whatever way I start taking credit for the miracle, I forget that I didn't do it in some way. And so the steps, the rest of the recovery program becomes less important. And so, but by year 10, I was given a good opportunity to look at the steps again. And at that point in time, my idea of doing the steps, our program of recovery, had been, I had done kind of a goofy little fourth step, wrote down every crappy little thing I'd ever done, and then told somebody about it, fifth step, and didn't have a lot of effect on me. I'd never worn a lot of guilt around, you know what I mean? I wasn't about relieving guilt. They say there are two camps in Alcoholics Anonymous. One is the people that seem to absorb guilt and come in with a lot of guilt and blame themselves. And the other camp is kind of the one I was in. I was on the other end of that spectrum, didn't blame myself a bit. If anything, I blamed you, you know. I heard a gal at a podium one night talking about she was in the former type. She felt faintly responsible for World War II, she thought. And not me, boy. If I didn't get caught, I didn't think I'd done it, you know. But I know something is amiss. I know something is amiss. But I'm talking the talk, and I'm doing the, and I'm sponsoring, and I'm going to, and I'm, you know, going through the motions, but it's pretty flat. But at the event of my 10th birthday, I spoke at a little meeting, and it was a wonderful talk. It was just, oh, I'm sorry you missed it. It was just... And a gal that I absolutely adore came up to me. She had about 24 years at the time, and she said after me, "Happy birthday." She said, "I'm just thrilled for you." And then she said to me, a lot of us at about 10 years start letting this program work in our lives. And I sounded like a compliment at first, but... And my brother had come up to Portland shortly after that, and he and I had been kind of apart, and he said he was doing the steps. He had fallen on some very difficult times, and he was reaching out for just about anything. He ran into a guy named Don Pritz. They were both speaking at a conference back in St. Louis. And they sat up until 2 o'clock in the morning, and Clint's world had fallen apart, and he was scared to death. And they started talking about the step work, because Don Pritz had gone through the steps when he was in prison in Colorado with another inmate. And they'd checked a book out of the prison library. And in addition to the weekly meeting that they had in that library, he and another guy got together, another inmate, and said, why don't we check a book out of the library and do what that first 100 said they did, step by step by step, page by page by page, and see what happens. So they did that. They did that. And when Don got out of prison, he continued to do that in meetings with other men. And if I have a message tonight, it is this. Do the steps. Do them in order, starting with step one, with another alcoholic who has done this. You wandered in this thing. Thanks. And we started doing that. And when Clint came up to what he called me and said, you know, I'm going around doing amends. I'm going to be in Portland on Thursday. Why don't you meet me out at the airport? And we went out to the airport. I met him at the airport. We were had been distanced. He made amends to me. I made amends to him. I asked him, as we do, Clint, what can I do to make my part right with you? The harm I have caused you, what can I do to make that right with you? And he said, thank you very much. He said, Carl, do the steps. Well, we honor those requests when we're making amends. And about that time, I ran into a guy named Jerry Jones from Dallas, who's headed up the litigation department in one of the largest law firms in Dallas. He had prepared an outline. He'd written an outline. The step process that Don Pritz had started was utilized in Colorado, and then it moved to Kansas, and then to Oklahoma, and then to Dallas, and then out to California. And when it got to Dallas, Jerry Jones and his group worked up an outline, starting with preface one, you know, small I, and all the way through the 12th step. And he brought that outline out. He had that outline with him. And it was at that point in time that I started with another group to do the steps based on that outline. It was about an 18 or 20 week process, a week's assignment followed by a meeting. And for an hour or an hour and a half. It was that process that I am very excited to tell you about that process and about how transformative that is. I have and it's the only way I know to really see the power in this program. I was selling myself short. I was happy, joyous, and free was definitely evading me. I was not there. I wasn't drinking, and that was good. But I was not getting my money's worth either. But starting after that 10th year, it was about a year 11, started to do the steps and started to realize, started to see, started to feel the full benefit. I don't know that I felt the full benefit, but certainly started to get my money's worth. And I've done that on a regular basis since that time. And a lot of us in this room have. And I, for those of you that have not or have discontinued it, please continue. Please continue. There is, and the reason is not to stay sober. The reason is to taste the honey. The reason is to taste the honey. We have, I will be at a meeting like this, and I know when I leave the meeting that I feel like I've touched the face of God, just because of the power in the room. And just because of what, and the guy takes a chip for 30 days, and I'm just so touched. Or somebody says something in the meeting, as happened last night, and it just brings a tear to my eye, and I feel the power of this thing, but then it's fleeting, and it's soon lost. And I leave the meeting, and I'm, back to business as usual, and I stop by that 7-Eleven on the way home, and she puts it in a plastic instead of paper, and I, God, I'm, Jesus. What happened, So I get little pieces of it. The step process permits me to get larger and larger pieces of the honey. In step four, Step three is a decision that we make to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And I'm not sure about that step, abandon myself to God, abandon myself to God? That's a little heavy, thank you. That's a little more than I had planned to do. How about turning it over? Now, this ain't an egg, kid. We don't turn it over. And I didn't really see the need to do that until I could see how how unmanageable my life was and how limited it was. I was continuing to try to do it on my own. And I did not until I started seeing glimpses of the power that was available to me. And was I okay with using a power from the outer? Was I okay with using somebody else's power? Did I need to use my power, which was virtually nil? And how would I feel if I started allowing God's power to flow through me? An early question was, she would ask, do you love me? Well, I don't know. I didn't say that. I thought, well, certainly do. But I didn't know. Somebody said in a meeting, I heard him one night in a meeting say, we don't manufacture love nearly as well as we ask God to take us to a place where his love for that person will flow through us. Just do that. And let God's love, God's power flow through me to accomplish whatever needs to be done that day. Just do that. But I don't get that without going, I don't understand that without going through the step process. And what happens in the step process for me is that I can see in step 4 and 5 those things that are blocking me from having a relationship with my Creator. And I can see the power as those defects, which I've discovered, are removed to a large extent in step 6 and 7 by asking God to remove them. And I can see step 8 the principle of which is forgiveness. But when I forgive, I'm free. And I can see in step 9 when I'm in a position to make that amend. I can see that relationship move from fear and distrust and anger to one of care and trust. It's restored or improved. So far beyond anything that I'm capable of doing. And I can see in 10 and 11 the value of getting close, of having daily spiritual practices, because the power moves through me. The power then can come through me. And if I have a wonderful result in some matter that I'm working on, and somebody says, and the person that I'm working with says, wow, what a wonderful result. You know, I can say, oh, thank you very much, and preen. Or I can tell them the truth, which is that I got out of the way. I asked God to take me to a place where his power could flow through. And is that okay with me? Yeah. Because what happens? I get the applause. I used to say, well, yes, thank you very much. I was afraid if I told the truth, they wouldn't pay my bill. And it's not, you know, we don't do that. We say, yeah, I got. And by then, probably the person with whom I'm working and I have already had some discussion about spiritual values and spiritual principles and how that might work and how we can rely on that. And so it is in that vein. And I will tell you this. There's not time to tell you of the incredible value that this has had and the impact that this has had in my marriage, in our marriage. Fran is with me tonight. And we have learned in the last year and a half of the power of prayer, of the power of saying, God, take the burden of this marriage. Just take the burden. I mismanage close personal relationships. I have a terrible history of screwing them up. On my own, I will ball it up. See, my mind is my untreated mind creates the problems, and then I go to that same mind to solve them. She looks at me that way, and I don't care for women to look at me that way, and I'd better let her know. It doesn't even occur to me that she's had that expression because she's got some discomfort with gas. She just looked at me that way, and I have to let her know that. Now I've got a real problem. And I look to this brain that created the problem to solve it. You know, not a good strategy. One guy grabbed me once and said, Carl, treat your mind like a bad neighborhood. Don't go in there alone. And so bit by bit, and sometimes grudgingly, we feel the freedom that comes with allowing God's power to work. And we pray. We've been through some bumps in the last year or so. Some pretty good bumps. But do you know what we did? And Fran was right there with me. She said, you know, we better pray. And we started praying in the morning together. You know, the book suggests that that is not a bad practice. I never attempted it. And the results that we have obtained from those prayers have just been astonishing. Does God care for us? Is it a loving and powerful God that is very interested? It's the same God that is keeping Saturn on axis, the same God that reached down and has touched you and me in such a way that we don't have to drink that day. And that same God says, sure, I'd love to take care of you. Trust me. And so, little by little, we trust. We trust more and more. With astonishing results. And that is, for me, a direct result of the magic and the genius of these steps. And I commend that to you. Thank you.